We are back for another season preview edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. This is going to be the Houston Rockets, and joining us from Red 94, excellent Houston Rockets blog, Rahat Hook. Rahat, what's up?
How are you, man?
I'm really good. So this is a team that made it to the Western Conference Finals a year ago and only got better, and yet it seems like they are kind of viewed as a little bit more of a dark horse in the Western Conference, 20-1 championship odds, which is kind of well below some of the other leading contenders like Oklahoma City, Golden State, the Spurs, even the Clippers. What do you make of that? I mean, how good was this team last year, and do you see them as being right there with that group of contenders that I named, or a little bit below them, as seems to be the conventional wisdom?
Well, I'm not sure I blame anybody outside of Houston or any odds makers for those odds. I think it's difficult to take Houston seriously right now just because what they did last season was so new. I mean, just recall that this is a team that annually was a first round out. And even the fashion in which they won last year in beating the Clippers, it was not something that you can really predict upon for later achievement. I mean, that was sort of a fluke. I mean, not to take anything away from coming back like that, but that's not something that you base future results upon. So they have to prove it. They have to prove that they're truly in the elite cusp. And so I don't really blame anybody for doubting the Rockets, for not completely trusting them. They're just going to have to prove it to everybody.
So before we continue, I want to tell you about our sponsor, DraftKings.com. Your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, but you don't have to wait until week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, and also my favorite one-week fantasy football site, because they don't have kickers, and all my friends use that one for that reason. No season-long commitments with one-week fantasy. If your player is injured, no problem. It's a new season every week. You're never stuck with the same players. You can challenge your friends in a one-week league or join an existing one to play for millions of dollars in prizes this football season. So hurry to DraftKings.com now. You can use the promo code CAPSPACE, all one word, very easy to remember since we talk about that a lot on the show. You can play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest. First place takes home $100,000. Enter the CAPSPACE code for free entry now at DraftKings.com.
There are a number of reasons to think that this team won't be as good as it was last year. One of them is that their point differential was not quite at the level of your typical number two seed in the West. But they won 56 games last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so their point differential wasn't quite there. I think it was just in the mid-threes. They actually, I think, as you said, the playoffs was a little bit fluky. I think they even got outscored through, I can't remember if it was through the first two rounds or through the overall playoffs, but definitely not the kind of resume that you would expect even in the playoffs. They kind of just beat up on a Mavericks team that was pretty much imploding due to injury and attitude. And then, the people kind of view it more as the Clippers collapsing than the Rockets doing anything so great, although I think that that's somewhat of a flawed conception. On the other hand, they got Ty Lawson now. They got a bunch of guys who should be better, young guys like Jones, Monty Unis, if he can come back from the back, even Harden, is not quite at 27 yet at his prime. And then Dwight Howard only played half the season last year. So he was playing on a torn MCL in that Golden State series. So you've got a lot of reasons to think that they could be worse, but then a lot of reasons to think that they could be better.
Absolutely. And I don't think they're going to be worse. I think you look at how they won last season, winning those 56 games. And so while I certainly cannot find fault in anyone for giving them distant odds in winning the title, I think just in winning those 56 games without Dwight Howard for half of the season and then now adding Ty Lawson, I think they only stand to get better. And as you mentioned, several young players who potentially could experience growth. I think the guy that you left out, really, that I'm really looking at is Clint Capela. And it's not just because of Capela himself, but the effects that that has on Dwight Howard. And I think we've seen now in two consecutive seasons that for the Rockets, there's nothing more important to them for their postseason chances than having a healthy Dwight Howard going into the playoffs. And so if Capella can continue growing, and we've seen that already in the preseason, he's packed on serious mass. If he can continue developing and allow the Rockets to rest Howard, they can weather the storm the way they did last season with Modiunas playing in his place. And I think James Harden, I think he's also going to continue improving, as crazy as that may seem. But every single year, he's just gotten better and better. And I think he's just conducive to aging very gracefully. And we just see these minor stuff he's adding upon every single offseason. And I think the best is yet to come for him.
Well, how is he going to get better, just from a skill development standpoint? You know, I will have to say that I don't necessarily agree with you on that. I think that he had a season last year that was a little bit beyond what he'd done before. Granted, he could be getting better, but he's also a guy that I don't think takes like the absolute tip-top best care of his body. I've noticed him getting a little heavier over the years. I've kind of seen his athleticism decline a little bit. Now, you know, I certainly understand the viewpoint that he's not that dependent on athleticism, and a lot of it, what he's doing is kind of guile and skill-based. But from your standpoint that you think he's going to get better, what is he going to get better at?
I think he's continuously getting better at the margins of those fine skills. And so, as you've noted, when he came into the league and early on, it was all about the threes and layups at the rim. But we saw, starting last season, that he was getting much better at the mid-range. I think there was a point where he was close to 50% on step-back jumpers. And the Chronicle recently ran a piece about how he got better on the stepping out to the right side. And so that was something that he had worked on over the offseason. So for James Harden, I think it's improving at the margins. And so improving that right hand, I think he can add a floater. I think he can start posting up better. And so I think improving at those small skill sets to diversify his overall abilities, I think that's where he can improve. And I think he's such a big guy for a shooting guard. It's going to be very difficult for anybody to be able to defend him down there. And so I think while that may seem completely counterintuitive to what Daryl Morey may want to do for the Rockets, I think those small marginal improvements is where you can see James Harden take the next step.
Yeah, you could also make the argument that he's going to get more spot-up chances this year. That'll give him a chance to be a little more efficient now. If Lawson is starting things off, running a pick-and-roll on one side of the floor, and then getting the ball to Harden with the defense on the move, I think that this has always been a Rockets attack that has kind of lacked diversity at times, especially late in games. And so the ability to get Harden the ball without everyone kind of loading up on him and forcing him to take an ISO jumper could really help him improve as well. And then I think just continuing to make incremental improvements on defense as well. Here's a question for you. Where do you see him fitting in among really the top five, six players in the league? You know, he was number two in the MVP voting a year ago. Do you think he can get back to that level again, or are we going to be thinking about him more as kind of the 5-6 range?
I guess it depends on how you define MVP. Are we talking about player or the most valuable player?
I think we're talking about just the best. Let's just say the best. All the nebulous effects of how your team did and the optics and, you know, what is the beat writer in Portland going to vote for MVP? You know, I think that's not that I have any problem with the beat writer in Portland. That's just an example. But just in terms of who's the best, I think it's a better way to frame that question, at least for this point.
Yeah, I think despite what he achieved last season, I think if we're talking about the best player in the NBA, I think still he's not quite in that top group with Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant. I think if we're talking about who's the most valuable player, I definitely think Harden was right up there with Curry, if not better than Curry. But I think if we're talking about the best player, I would agree with you, not to mischaracterize what you may have said, but I think that Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant and LeBron are still a step ahead of Harden. I think the thing about Harden that's interesting is that he doesn't have the physical gifts that any of these other elite, super elite talents have. And so much of what he does is dependent upon skill and craftiness. And so I think the things that LeBron and Kevin Durant are able to do. I think those are natural gifts that kind of elevate them to a completely different level. And I think for Harden, it would be kind of difficult to reach that level at 6'5", slightly overweight. I mean, he struggles against long arm defenders at times. It's kind of easier to defend him than it would be against some of these other guys. And again, that's nothing to take away from Harden. He's still, you know, being the fifth best player in the league, if that's how we're defining him, is nothing to sneeze at. But I think that he's still kind of a rung below those guys if we're talking about who's the best player.
Yeah, and he also has been plagued by inconsistency, especially in the playoffs. And maybe you can say because he was relying a lot, especially against the Warriors, on that step back jumper, and when it was falling and when he was being defended by Klay Thompson, he looked great. And then, you know, he also had a 3-for-16 game, and he had 10 turnovers in a game, and, struggled at times as well, but also had just some unbelievable games. And he's kind of also dependent on getting calls as well. I mean, that's probably more speculation to say that someone with that type of game is going to be more inconsistent than someone else. But maybe that's something to consider. Another thing I really wanted to talk about for this team is the power forward position. I see that despite the fact that they have a guy in Jones who either in an extension or next summer could get a contract that's well into eight figures, probably I think most people would say over $15 million a year, I still kind of view that position as a little bit of a weakness with him and then Monty Unis coming off the back injury. Do you see it that way as well when they're really going up against the best teams, or do you think that those guys can make another leap, or do you think that I'm just underrating them to begin with?
It's the biggest question mark on this team, absolutely, and I think that stems from the fact that Monty Unis is injured right now, and that's one thing that hasn't been reported enough. Enough that has not been made about that. I mean, he's coming off back surgery, so we don't completely know.
Yeah, we've been talking
about
that a lot.
Yeah, and Terrence Jones is a guy who I personally just absolutely do not trust, especially in a playoff season. We've seen continuously year in, year out now, he's feasted on second units and inferior opponents, but against these better teams in the postseason, he's absolutely disappeared. And I completely agree with you. He stands to make a significant payday this offseason, but I don't think that the Rockets would be wise in paying him. They're certainly not going to extend him. They hope to retain their flexibility. But it's absolutely a question mark. Now, I think if Monty Unis can come back healthy, I think that gives the Rockets a chance. But I've almost gotten to the point now where I can't trust Terrence Jones to be the starter. And if they enter the postseason again with him as their main guy, and of course last year they had Josh Smith to pick up the slack, and that's probably why they got past the Clippers. But if they're depending on Terrence Jones, I don't think this team can go far. They need a healthy Monty Unis, and I think he still has room to grow.
Yeah, so Monty Unis, we don't know how he's going to look. Obviously, he's coming up on the six-month mark now, even beyond that, from that surgery. The microdiscectomy, I believe, is what he had. But yeah, I agree with you that that's been quite underreported. I mean, where is he at right now?
Right now, I mean, it's tough to say. We haven't seen him yet. And so until he's actually getting out there and getting actual reps, it's anybody's guess at this point right now.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly hasn't been any indication that he's close, that he's even practicing fully or anything like that. So, I think it's definitely a concern. I mean, but let's assume for now that he does come back healthy. Ultimately, I'm getting the impression that you like him better than Terrence Jones as a potential starter, as a go-to guy in the playoffs?
Much better, yes.
So what's the reason for that?
He's a lot more versatile in his game. First of all, the biggest thing about him is defensively, he's much better than Terrence Jones, and this is something that doesn't completely meet the eye test. You look at Terrence Jones, he's a great athlete. He's not quite freakish, but he's a very good athlete. Seems to protect the rim well, and if you look at percentages of him protecting the rim on his block shot percentage, it's much higher than Monty Unis. But Monty Unis is
overall and that's a rare veteran skill among power forwards. If you really think about it, there's not that many guys who actually can protect the rim. But you think just he doesn't have the intelligence level defensively? Is that where you're going here?
I mean, he regularly gets lost on rotations. He gets beat by bigger players. Moti Unis' actual, the team's actual percentage with Moti Unis on the court is better in shots against the rim with Moti Unis than with Terrence Jones. I think also on the other end, Moti Unis can actually create his own shot. So while Terrence Jones is a better ball handler, a lot of that is when the ball is swung out on the perimeter. He's reliant on the pump fake. But Moti Unis is a guy you can actually throw the ball into in the post at a very high percentage on hook shots and other shots in the post. I think it was at one point, I don't know what it ended up at, but at one point it was the highest in the league. So overall, I'm just a lot higher on Moti Unis and what he can bring. I think you don't see him get lost on rotations nearly as much as Terrence Jones does. And that was really the big thing that made me sour on Terrence Jones. He just doesn't seem to be getting it. And Moti Unis, he still seems to have hope in that department.
I think the other thing that you didn't mention is Moti Unis probably is someone I trust. I have, neither of them have proven it to me yet, but I think I trust Moti Unis a little bit more as a guy who's going to be able to hit the three-point shot consistently. He at least doesn't hesitate before taking it. It doesn't go in necessarily all that often yet, but he's hopefully getting to that point. And he posted something on Twitter the other day of, you know, how he had hit like 200 of 271 threes or something like that. So he's obviously working on it. Jones, I think, you know, even when he's wide open, you can kind of tell he almost doesn't want to take it. And so that's a little bit of a concern as well. I mean, it'll be interesting to see Moti Unis, because I just, you know, maybe against the Spurs, he's a little bit better of a matchup. But against the Warriors, would you say that Jones at least is better at, like, switching out on pick and rolls than Moti Unis, or are you not going to give him even that much credit?
I wouldn't even give him that, even though the logic from the eye test would dictate, you would think that Jones would be better just because he's so much more athletic. But overall, I just find Moti Unis so much more fundamentally sound defensively than Jones. And he looks so slow and lumbering. You often see him falling down, tripping over his feet, but he's better than Jones on that end.
Yeah. You know, do you think Moti Unis is better defensively as a four or a five?
It's, you know, they actually played their best with him at the five. And so it's interesting. You raise a good point there. I don't have the splits in front of me, but I think he might actually be better in that sense. But of course, you know, playing against bigger players, that has also caused him problems, as we saw last season. But I don't have the splits in front of me, and so I would be interested to see how he fares at each position.
Yeah, and I certainly think that his post-up game is something that works a lot better against fours than against fives, especially because, you know, I think he can be pushed just that extra step away from the rim by opposing fives. His post game is really nice in terms of a skill level. I would like to see him just add a little bit more of a power game to where he can get fouled. He never gets fouled on those post-ups. It's all just a finesse hook shot, maybe an up and under or something like that. I would like to see him take advantage of his hook shots to develop some counter moves where he actually can get fouled. But so, you know, let's say Moti Unis comes back. I still, with either of those guys, I feel like that's a position that is the weak link on this team and might need an upgrade. What about the idea of potentially going small with someone like Ariza or even KJ McDaniels, if he can start to make an impact at the four? What do you think the chances are of that working out?
I think that would be the hope for them. That's certainly the hope, and why they invested $10 million into KJ McDaniels this summer is that it gives them that depth and that versatility where you can have not only Ariza insurance, but you can play those guys together. Don't forget about Corey Brewer. But with KJ McDaniels, we've seen all these highlight reels and the shot blocks and the amazing athleticism, but I don't see him getting on the court until he can hit shots consistently and make the defense respect him, even at the power forward position. And there doesn't seem to be any indication that he's improved in that regard. And so while I can't think of a bigger wild card for this team than McDaniels, and that includes Capella and Lawson, you know, it just remains to be seen whether or not he can even get on the court. Because if he could, that would just give the Rockets so many more options, as you noted, being able to play those extremely small and athletic lineups.
Yeah, that would be great if they could get to the point of switching. And I think McDaniels has a ways to go with his shot, although I don't know that his shot is really that much worse than, say, Corey Brewer's. So Corey, I think, has always been someone who's been a little overrated defensively, just because he gets a lot of steals. He's really long. He looks like he'd be a real good defender, but he spaces out a lot and, you know, is not that strong. So, but it's and I was surprised that he got quite the number that he did in free agency. So what is your what's your closing lineup then for this team if you're Coach Kevin McHale?
I think the big debate that people are talking about right now is whether or not the starting lineup includes Beverly or Lawson. I think the closing lineup will absolutely, I don't think there's any question, it'll include Lawson and Harden in the backcourt, of course, Dwight Howard at center. And I think for the other two spots, I think they're just going to go depending on matchups. So if they're playing a team where they need to go small, I think you could see Ariza and whoever, probably Brewer. And one thing that we've seen so much, which this kind of goes in line with the discussion about power forward being the weak spot, is that for several years now, I think the entirety of the James Harden era now, the Rockets in close games against the best teams, they always close with Jones, and Modius didn't start playing until last season, so that's irrelevant, but they always have closed with the power forward on the bench. I mean, back in the earlier years, they'd have Delfino playing the power forward spot. They'd have Chandler Parsons. They always try to play small. They didn't have that. The problem is they didn't have that many good small players to effectively do that. And so it's been a problem.
It's a lot of teams' problems. There just aren't enough wings to go around in the league.
Yeah. So it's going to be difficult for them. I mean, you hope that Terrence Jones makes that next step. You hope that Mody Yunus can get healthy and continue to improve. But I think that that's the question mark for them.
I think Ariza has to be out there in the closing lineup, absolutely, for sure. He's the only guy you look at as an established guy who can really lock down on the wing, especially if you're going to be playing Lawson and Harden. You got to have him out there, in my opinion. And yeah, I think it's just it's that fourth or that the four spot, I guess you could look at as being that last one. Maybe it'll be Brewer. I mean, I think it would be amazing if McDaniels could get to the point where he could hit enough shots and be good enough defensively to be out there. But I don't predict that that's going to happen. So it seems like it'll probably be Jones or Demo. It's your prediction that neither of those guys gets extended, by the way?
I don't think either of them is going to get extended. I think Daryl Morey just wants to wait and see until the summer, unless he gets a sweetheart deal from one of them, and that's so unlikely. But if I had to make a prediction, I would be very shocked if they extend either of those guys right now.
Yeah, maybe you could say that Demo, because of the injury situation, and again, we don't know exactly where that's at right now, that he might be willing to just sign up and get some guaranteed money. I mean, even if it's something like 4 for $40, that's still life-changing money. You know, that if you have a back injury like that, you're worried. But I don't know that he would take that necessarily.
Yeah. If you could get Demo at $10 million a year, I think that's the scenario where that conversation begins. But if you're looking at their prospective market value and you're talking about extending prematurely into that, and we're talking about each of these guys being worth about $15 million a year, I would be shocked if Daryl Morey began that process. So I think barring some sort of bargain, and I think Demo would be the guy there just because of the injury, I would be shocked if that happened.
Who do you think is going to comprise the rotation for this team? We've got Lawson, Harden, Ariza, Jones, Mati Yunus, Howard, probably Corey Brewer, Beverly. I mean, what's that, eight guys? So who then is going to fill in maybe those ninth and tenth spots?
Did you leave out Howard?
I said the starters, Monty Yunus, Corey Brewer, and Beverly were the three bench guys that I mentioned.
Yeah, so outside of that, you definitely have to throw Capella in there. I expect him to get pretty big minutes. Sam Decker will probably be in the D League. He has not been that – he's not fared too well in the preseason. But I think
– Yeah, he was terrible. He was terrible at the game that I was at against the Warriors when they basically – I was joking that it was the Rio Grande Valley Vipers against the Warriors, but he just looked awful. He was like 1-7 and really just did nothing in like 26 minutes when, you know, a guy who's a first-round pick playing with guys like Joshua Smith, you would expect that he would at least be able to do something, and that was not the case.
Yeah. I think – and having said that, with Decker probably going to the D League, I think you and I are both on the same page regarding KJ McDaniels that, and I would speak for all Rockets, anyone following this team, a fan of this team, I think if McDaniels can crack the rotation and play serious minutes and provide productivity for them, I think that's where you look at real growth for this team. I mean, that's where you can really get excited about this team. And that just remains to be seen. And so the guys we just mentioned, I think the guy you left out would be Capella. I think Capella absolutely will be part of the rotation. And not many minutes left after that. But if KJ McDaniels can crack the rotation, I think that's where the Rockets can really improve over last season.
I agree. And I am wary of McDaniels because he didn't play at all last year. I think that his reputation was massively inflated just by a hot month at the very start of last year from three for the Sixers. But really, you know, I think we have to look at him as a guy who is, you know, a 30% three-point shooter at this point until proven otherwise. And also, you know, just as a young guy, we don't know that he is going to understand the schemes defensively well enough. So I agree with you. It'd be awesome if they can leverage his strengths, you know, if he can do some of the smaller, less spectacular things that he needs to do to get on the floor. But I do worry that the idea of him is really more advanced than his actual real skill level and his ability to help a team play winning basketball at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those things, a pie in the sky hope that you see this guy and substantively, I don't know if it adds up to what you hope that he can become. And again, it's just such a question mark, especially from a shooting perspective.
All right, what do you see as the big strengths of this team this year that they can rely on a night-to-night basis?
Well, obviously they have Harden, but I think the big thing on paper, aside from maybe the Warriors, depth-wise, I think the Rockets, would you agree with that? They're probably the deepest team in the league?
Ooh, the deepest team in the league. That's a tough call. I mean, a lot of it is depending kind of on these young guys to take a step forward. Capella, for all that everyone has loved him, and I agree, he's looked very promising. He also barely played last year, you know, and I think we might be getting just a little bit ahead of ourselves to see what he's going to be able to do in big minutes from the standpoint of really being able to play quality NBA defense, you know, and he's a good pick and roll guy, but still pretty skinny as well. I think. I'm not foreclosing on the fact that he could be quite good this year, but we might be getting a little ahead of ourselves for a guy who's 21. Monty Yunus could still be injured. I mean, they don't have one guy off the bench that you look like for sure is really amazing, although they have a lot of guys, and I think some of those guys could hit. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely right up there, though, as being a pretty deep team, and they have I guess Beverly you could look at as a really good backup point guard too. So yeah, maybe scoring off the bench might be the one weakness that you'd look at, but maybe Monty Yunus falls into that category. So yeah, they're certainly a very deep team to be sure.
Yeah. And of course, Monty Yunus being that question mark and the experience of Capella, but they seem to be too deep at every position if we answer those question marks. And so I would have to say that's the strength of the Rockets. And you saw them weather the storm last season with so many injuries. And they've added to that core, adding Lawson, moving Beverly to the bench. And so I would say that I think they're built well to withstand the regular season. I think they're built to where they can withstand the annual Dwight Howard injury. They can rest him, and that's provided Mo Yunus can come back. And so I think that's the strength. And I think they seem on paper, we don't know yet, they seem on paper like they're going to have a lot of versatility with different lineups. And so I would point to those two things for the Rockets as things that you can kind of pin your hopes on.
We haven't talked really much about Howard at all. He, again, is going through camp with some nagging injuries. It seems like that is going to be, you know, with his knees, his back, those are two things that you don't really want to have nagging injuries with. And now he's at the point where he's had chronic issues with both of those. I think he was still awesome in the playoffs last year when he was healthy, although really the days of him being a guy that you go to in the post are probably past.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of going to him in the post, I've written extensively on this. Has been my pet peeve, my pet topic over the last 2 years. You look at his percentages when they go to him in the post, and he's among the worst post-up players in the league, and it just completely bogs down the Rockets' offense. So offensively, it's been a challenge to keep him engaged in what he needs to do, and that's rolling to the rim and sucking in the defense on that pick and roll. And I guess there's a lot to be said for keeping the big man happy, and so the Rockets have to keep feeding him in the post down there. But defensively, I think that he still has a lot left in the tank as a major force in this league. It just becomes a matter of maintaining his minutes, and I think the Rockets plan to do that this season. But offensively, I would hope that with the addition of Lawson that they can kind of cut down on those post possessions, because those are really wasted possessions by and large for the Rockets a lot of the time.
Yeah, one of the things that doesn't necessarily show up so much for him in his post-ups is he just turns the ball over so often on those.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the things that turnovers are something that people don't talk about enough. I am guilty of not talking about it enough on the season preview podcast. And that's probably actually an overall weakness for this team. Other than Harden, I think they have a lot of guys who might turn the ball over that quite a bit, starting with Howard. And I think maybe Howard can still be effective in certain matchups if they really try to guard him with a skinny guy. But it should be more racing down in transition, post-ups right under the rim, using his strength instead of, all right, let's throw it to him 15 feet from the basket, turn and face, you know, travel 20% of the time as you try to turn and face, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it should be completely situational. And I think a lot of it for him is ego-driven. I think that he's been so effective in his career in just finishing off the pick and roll. I mean, the Orlando Magic went to the finals built on an offense with that. I mean, you look at the percentages of him completing at the rim and how good he's allowed his teams to be with that. And I think he hears critics like Shaq on TV talk about the need for great big men to dominate in the post. I think that kind of gets to him, you know, and I think that's completely destructive for him, because in the modern NBA, that's not necessary anymore. You can be a great big man without needing to score in the post. Dwight Howard was a great big man. He still is a great big man. He doesn't need to post up to help his team and to help his team advance.
Yeah, I think there was a time when he actually was really good in the post and was underrated. And I do think that the people who say, oh, he's so unskilled, like, that's not true. He actually has one of the better left hands, for example, of a lot of big men. And, you know, for example, like, he put up 40 points on a Cavs team that had a bunch of good big men to send them home in Game 6 of the 2009 Eastern Conference Finals, you know, to beat a 66-win Cavs team. So there was a time when he was real good at it, but I think that time has passed. And the hope maybe is, now that they finally have Lawson, they have these two awesome pick-and-roll guys in Lawson and Harden, that he finally is going to abandon that. And I think, especially against the Warriors, once he suffered that MCL injury, it seemed like he was more focused on rolling to the basket. And I totally agree with you that at this point in his career, with these other weapons on the team, that's absolutely what he should be doing. Weaknesses. Is coaching a weakness for this team?
I would have to say it is. I think that Kevin McHale has not been the most tactical guy, to put it lightly. He's not the greatest tactician. But I don't know that that's the structure that Daryl Morey wants. I don't know that that's the modern NBA, the hierarchy these days. I think you want a leader of men at the top, the kind of a figurehead for the organization. And then I think you want the assistants to really be able to get into the nitty-gritty of the plays. And so I think the Rockets took a huge step forward last season hiring T.R. Dunn, who's the lead assistant under Rick Adelman when the Rockets were a very good defensive team. They started out last season as a better defensive team. So I think there's growth in that regard. So I don't think that Kevin McHale is necessarily the wrong guy. I think that we haven't seen anything about James Harden or Dwight Howard speaking negatively about him. So I think in that respect, I think the most important thing is just having that leader there. And it remains to be seen if the assistants can pick up the slack, but it seems like they're on the right track.
Yeah, 2 years ago, after that Portland series, I was of the position that they should maybe try for an upgrade there. And, of course, the quintessential play was that Lillard play where they didn't know whether they were switching or not, you know, in that game six that beat them, that iconic shot where, you know, Parsons was running after him way too late. And really, in that series as well, I thought that they just did not defend well enough overall. But they took a huge step forward defensively last year. They were the number two defense for quite a bit of the season, although some people have argued pretty cogently that was, a lot of that was based on just luck with other teams missing open three-pointers. But nonetheless, they look better. And I think although they're going to have Lawson in this year, is not a great defender. He and the staff got Harden to defend much better. You know, that was one of the reasons that I felt like they might need a new voice, but they got him to defend better. If they have a full season of Howard this year, Capella, Jones, Monty Unis can take steps forward. They still have Ariza. You know, I think they could be right up there around the cusp of a top five defense again this year. I mean, what did you think as far as like McHale's coaching during the playoffs, some of the adjustments that he made? I mean, because this obviously is the team that's what they're playing for, is the playoffs now.
Just to circle back, that play where Damian Lillard ended the Rockets season, just the way that went down with the Rockets embarrassingly not knowing their coverage, it was just absolutely an embarrassment, humiliating way to end the season. And I mean, that was shared so many times. And so after that point, I completely agree with you. I thought that they needed an upgrade, and then became clear that they were going to stick with McHale. And I think you kind of saw the thinking there. And I've kind of come around on McHale in that sense, in that I think that continuity, that leadership in the locker room, that, you know, the unifying voice, I think there's a lot of value to that rather than just having the constant turnover and having potentially somebody, you know, who the players completely tune out, because that's potentially the worst thing. And so I've come around on McHale since then, but after that Portland series, I was with you right there. I was one of the people saying that I thought the Rockets needed a change at the top.
Yeah, and I think they did well to bring in the assistance that they did. As you said, on the other hand, you know, going up against Steve Kerr and his staff, Greg Popovich, I mean, we don't know what Billy Donovan's going to be. Doc Rivers, you know, I think, might be a little overrated. But I think Kerr and Popovich might look at as a cut above McHale. But I'm at the point now where I don't think, all right, you know, this coaching staff is not good enough. It's holding them back. And that's an advancement for this team. All right, let me ask you this. What are the key questions you're monitoring throughout this year, some of the key storylines that you think are going to determine success or failure for this Rocket season?
Well, I guess you always have to start with health for Houston, especially after last season, the way Dwight Howard missed most of the year, half of the year. I think that's the biggest question mark. I don't think Harden would be a question mark. I think you said that you expect him maybe to take a step back at this point. So
yeah, not a major one, but just maybe just a slight one, and maybe only just relative to some of those other guys, especially with the fact that Durant's coming back. I mean, don't take it the wrong way. It's like, all right, I don't think James Harden's any good anymore. I mean, I think he'll still be, you know, right on the cusp of a top 5-6 player in the league. But I think he might have just been slightly over his head overall last year. But we'll see. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I don't know that you need to expect Harden to be better. So while I don't know if he'll take a step back or not, even if he remains the same, I don't know if he's even in the question as far as questions for the Rockets. So I think it starts with health, and of course, Ty Lawson, the question marks over his personal battle, that, you know, we don't know how that's going to shake out for him. And he also has had some lingering injury problems over the course of his career. But with the Rockets, I think it's all about Howard and whether or not they can maintain his minutes. And of course, Monte Ennis, that's the other big question mark in terms of health. Can he come back? And so they have to have a power forward in the postseason. And so I don't find Jones dependable. And so Monte Ennis is just so important that he comes back healthy. And as we talked about earlier, that's been underreported whether or not he can make a full comeback and be as effective as he was last season or even take the next step. So for the Rockets, the biggest question mark, like I said, is health. And after that, I would just say probably whether or not Ty Lawson can stay on the court.
Yeah, that's obviously a concern and not something that I think either of us is really qualified to speculate on, but something that certainly should be monitored. What do you think as far as potential playoff matchups? I mean, we'll limit it to, I think the other people in that top tier, or the other teams in that top tier, Golden State, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Clippers. Are there any of those teams you feel like the Rockets match up particularly well against? Are there any of those teams that you're really scared of?
It's a bloodbath out West. I mean, you're terrified of every single team. I think that in the past, I think that you may have mistakenly pointed to San Antonio as somebody that the Rockets may have matched up well against, but I don't think anybody wants to play San Antonio. That you're so overmatched at the coaching spot. And now, of course, they go out and add LaMarcus Aldridge. And so I think you look at all those top teams in the West, the top six teams, and I think you're terrified to play any of them. Every single one of them poses a unique situation against you and has their own mismatches. And so I don't think there's any, and even the Clippers, who the Rockets beat last season, and we talked about this at the beginning, I don't know if I'd call it a fluke or I did. That's not something you can really hang your hat on and say that we're better than the Clippers because we beat them. I think that's something that I don't know that you can say that if it's repeated again, I don't know if that same outcome is going to happen again. So the Clippers are right there in that mix, and they had the Rockets' numbers through those first few games. Now, they say that they didn't have the mental focus necessary to win a title, but they were a better team than the Rockets at the beginning of that series, and they posed serious matchup problems for them. I think J.J. Redick defended James Harden as good, or if not better, than anybody I've seen defend him since Harden has been a Rocket. And, of course, DeAndre Jordan at the rim provides all sorts of problems. And so every single one of those top teams, I think you have to be terrified, and they have unique advantages that they each bring.
Yeah, I actually like them okay against San Antonio because I think that there is a chance that they can just run them off the floor. And I think, Howard does pretty well against them. On the other hand, Kawhi is a great Harden matchup as well, so maybe you don't think that. And I think that, Tony Parker is someone that they could potentially exploit, but I agree with you. I don't think that they match up incredibly well with any of these teams. So give me a predicted record and seed for the Rockets and a best case, worst case scenario.
Let's say 59 wins is my prediction. And I think that for that to happen, I guess the prediction is exclusive to the best case, right?
Well, no, I'm saying prediction and then best case and worst case being two different things. I mean, prediction presumably would be somewhere in between best case and worst case.
Let's have the prediction at 59 wins. And I think a best case, I think you could see them somewhere in the mid-60s if everything goes right for them.
Wow.
So that would mean Harden clicking, taking the next step. That would mean Howard coming back fully healthy. That would mean Ty Lawson and Harden meshing. Everything would have to go right for them, but I don't think it's completely out of the question. And for worst case, I mean, they could plummet all the way to the mid 40s if you just have a Harden injury. I mean, Howard most likely will be injured at some point, so that's not even a stretch to predict he's going to be injured. He's most likely going. That's the safer bet that he's going to miss time. And so, if you see a Harden injury, I don't know that while they are extremely deep, those are role players that we're talking about. So I don't know if they're built to sustain a Harden injury. So you could see them plummet all the way to about 45 wins. I think if we see Harden miss any serious amount of time, if Ty Lawson just doesn't work out for whatever reason, he's not a good shooter, a long range shooter. So you could see potentially problems there. But I think that would be the range.
Yeah, my prediction would be about 55 wins, in part because of the health concerns for Howard, for Monty Unis that you talked about. And I think the best case would maybe be 60, 61 possibly, worst case being about 50. I mean, I don't think Harden's going to get hurt. He's really has been very healthy so far in his career. So I think as long as he's healthy, even if they're missing Dwight, they can duct tape it together enough to get to 50, 51 wins. The biggest thing that I see is a weakness for them that I probably should have shared during the weaknesses section was I just don't think they quite have enough shooting to be an elite offense. They don't have that one guy that you just absolutely cannot leave at the arc. And if they ever got, you know, a Ryan Anderson style, a stretch four, or they got a guy like, you know, even Damari Carroll or someone like that who now you can really play small ball with a guy who is a reliable three-point shooter. Because Ariza is a good volume guy, but isn't a guy that, we're terrified to leave him. That's what I see as the one reason why I have them just a little bit below in terms of tier from Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and Golden State, but I think they're kind of right there with the Clippers in the second tier in the West. So I'd predict them maybe during the regular season, they might be a little bit better regular season team due to their depth, but I think they probably end up losing in the second round or maybe even in the first round if they end up being a 4 or 5 seed. But if they can get to a 3 seed, I think they'll advance.
Yeah, it's interesting that you note that because has been saying many times over the year. I mean, the irony about the Rockets is that for a team that's so dependent on long distance shooting, they don't really have good 3-point shooters. And so as you said, if they ever were able to get that one knockdown shooter, that would really help them. And so it is ironic in that sense.
How are you doing on time, by the way? You got time for one more question or you got to get moving?
I'm good. I'm good.
Actually, I think this one's more interesting. What do you think happens with Dwight Howard next summer? He has an option for the next year, which is basically, I think, about $23 million or so that he can either opt in or opt out. I would expect him to opt out unless he's just totally injured this year. But, you know, beyond that, what do you think happens?
You know, it goes back to how they handle him this year as well. I mean, it's not, while it's in the team's best interest for them to sit him and, you know, pursue this maintenance plan of sorts, that's not in his best individual financial interest. I think Dwight Howard may have motivated, and despite everything he has said about it all being about the team, I mean, until it's all said and done, we just don't know. It's not, and I wouldn't fault him either. It's not completely out of the question that he comes in motivated, wanting to prove himself and wanting to, you know, procure those individual numbers in search of another payday this summer. And so we just don't know how it's going to go for him this summer. I think he will back up what he's been saying. I mean, he seems to like it here in Houston. He seems to have been embraced by the city. So I could see him coming back. And I don't know what kind of interest would be there for him in around the league. I mean, of course, most of the league will be expected to have just obscene amounts of money in him, but it just all depends on how it goes for him this season in terms of the injuries.
It's going to be fascinating what he might get. on the open market, because unlike guys like Durant and Horford, who are in the 7 to 9 year experience bracket, his max, if with the assuming the cap's $89 million, is going to be about $29.3 million, and that's starting at that. You know, if he gets 7.5% annual raises, if he stays with the Rockets for 5 years, he's going to be 30 years old, or 4.5% even with another team. Do the Rockets say, we are going to pay you $30 million a year? You'll probably end up at $35 million a year 5 years from now when you're 35. Is that what it's going to take to keep him? He does have some other potential options. Maybe, you know, maybe he could go to Miami, Chicago even. Is, you know, the, if they lose Noah and Gasol, might be able to get pretty close up to his max. So it'll be interesting to see, especially with his injury history, is someone going to pay him that super max? For ages 30 to 34, 35, I don't know. I mean, I think it would be very, very risky to do that. He's clearly not going to be worth that by the end of the contract. But then so many teams have cap space, you say, well, maybe you might as well do it, especially because he's a guy who still has it defensively and on the pick and roll and could put us over the edge in these first couple of years. So I don't know. I think if the Rockets offer him that five-year max right away, he'll be back. I think especially getting that, you know, $35 million bucks in the fifth year is something that you just can't sneeze at. But I think that they, as a fiscally responsible management group, are going to be very loath to offer him the absolute max. And that's when it's going to get interesting to see whether he tries to go somewhere else to get that, whether he deals with something maybe starting at like $25 million instead of $29 million. All that is going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Where can we catch up with you on Twitter, and tell us about the site?
So the site is red94.net. That's the word red and then the number 94.net. And the Twitter handle is a little bit different. It's just red94 spelled out in three words. It was great catching up with you, Nate, and I hope to do it again.
All right, yeah, and that's, of course, the way to remember that site is because their colors are red and they first won the championship in 1994. That's where that comes from, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you caught that. I've had so many people ask me what the origin is. Kind of regret picking that name.
Oh, well, sunk cost. You can't change it now, right?
Right.
All right, well, you can catch up with me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. My Facebook page, I just posted an article evaluating some of the free agent destinations, some of which Dwight Howard might be looking at potentially at Sports Illustrated and the Cauldron. There's a link to that on my Facebook page, which is also Nate Duncan NBA. If you'd like to support the podcast, you may do so via the cap space code on DraftKings or SeatGeek. Those are both great ways to help keep us in business. And also an iTunes rating or ranking is really appreciated. So thanks so much to Rahat for coming on, and we will talk to y'all next time.